Today is June the 9th, 2006, and we are visiting with Gertrude Barnstone. Gertrude, you know that we're doing this project looking back in time to Houston in the 50s and 60s and the art scene and the artists and what was going on, how vital things were and how your involvement started, when it started, and if you want to go back earlier than that, that's fine too. So take it away.
Okay. Yeah, I guess in the sense it started much earlier than that, because I guess I was about 7 when my mother took me over to the Museum of Fine Art and talked to Mr. Chilman, and he said, draw a circle. And I drew a circle. I don't know why. And okay, so he put me in the class. It wasn't children's classes. It was an adult class and did oil paintings and nudes and all kinds of good stuff. It was exciting and very alive. A new teacher came from Pennsylvania, Bob Joy, moved down from Pennsylvania to Houston with his family. That was during the Depression.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all pretty vital, and it was very exciting for me. It became my life.
You were 7?
Mm-hmm. And then on through the years, and I was back and forth with art, and I don't know, eventually, much water under the bridge. By the 50s, there was this fabulous sense of wonderful things happening, wonderful in the terms of energy and hopefulness. The war was over. Well, the late 40s, like in 1948, so many people moved here,
mm-hmm.
including Howard, and I became a husband,
mm-hmm.
In 48.
Mm-hmm.
And Houston just, and the Shamrock was built then, and everything just bloomed and exploded and wonderful, and everything was possible, and there was such an energy and positive sense in the air.
Mm-hmm.
It was terrific.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
you had, were you weren't married quite yet then?
No, we got married in 48. This was between the late 40s, and was when all this good stuff started happening. And then there was the CAM came along about
CAA.
Then. Yeah, that's CAA, right.
Well, now, were you involved in that right in the very beginning?
Well, in terms of volunteering to do things.
Well, everyone was volunteering.
Exactly. Right. I mean, I was there a lot,
mm-hmm.
doing things. In fact, that's how Howard and I sort of got together, because he is a newcomer to Houston, got involved there. And that was, of course, the scene of so much happening, because here were the Dimoniles,
mm-hmm.
and that became there a good enterprise for them. Houston was there. What's the term? Tabula rasa. Blank canvas. And it was just, this added to the sense of incredible, wow, let's go. To have that, and with first class art, not pretenders,
right.
Not second class, not, you know, really top notch stuff. And their activities and involvement were fabulous, exciting, artistically exciting. And then came the inevitable, I guess it was inevitable, with the development of the burlap group.
Now, I haven't heard about the burlap group.
Well, there was the players were the Dimoniles, who were non-burlap group. The burlap group were a lot of Houston artists. Not me. A lot of Houston artists who wanted to make the CAM and any art and a lot of art activity in Houston, exhibition activity,
mm-hmm.
exhibits of Houston artists.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Dimoniles wanted, they brought the Van Gogh show,
yeah,
and they
yeah.
wanted to do other things that were, you know, right up there. And but these other people objected strongly. They said it should be an opportunity for them. They needed a venue to
right.
show there and develop. And as far as I was concerned, I wasn't going to learn anything looking at my work. And I knew most of their work from art school. I wanted to see things I wouldn't otherwise see in Houston.
Of course.
That's the only way I was going to grow as an artist.
How did they get the name of the Burlap Group?
Because they like to... I don't know if it was a metaphor for other things, but the idea was that they would, if they could, or maybe they did, hang burlap on the walls and hang their art on the burlap. And then, of course, again, I mean, the Dimineos were just a major power, a force for good. Mm-hmm. They brought Jerry McGagee, mm-hmm. and she was one fantastic person.
I bet she must have been. She did so much. She affected so many people.
Exactly. And just her personality was so dynamic. And so, I mean, it was, you were just attracted to it just by the force of her. But it was such a good kind of thing. It wasn't
manipulative.
It never struck me that way, certainly. And I've never heard anything like that about her. But she was a real vital force. I mean, really, things happening. And things of the mind, mm-hmm. that's what was so exciting about all this. It was things of the mind and artistic and creation. And then there was Jim Sweeney,
mm-hmm.
and Laura came. And that was tremendous.
That was good for Houston, too.
Yeah.
Even though he didn't last that long. But he certainly mounted some fabulous exhibitions.
He did fabulous things while he was here. They became real good friends of ours. As well as Jerry McGagee, and, you know, so it was real personal with us. Howard was doing a lot of work for Schlumberger,
mm-hmm.
the Dimineos.
Mm-hmm.
And
Howard was an architect.
Yeah, mm-hmm. right. And he was doing a lot of things in Venezuela,
mm-hmm.
and some in Trinidad. We used to go there a good amount. But the Sweeneys, but here again, it was not having narrow boundaries, all of these things made the boundaries endless, you know, way out there. So the sky was the limit for what you could try to do. I mean, extending, trying, building on your development, one's development.
Gertrude, were you actively involved in the Contemporary Arts Association when it started off?
I don't know that I was actively involved when it's in the inception of it and getting it going, but I know the people that did that were friends of ours, and without any official anything, I mean, I think I was sort of involved in,
right,
knowing about it and talking about it with them, but I didn't have any real role, but I was certainly aware and sort of keeping up with what was going.
Yeah, sure,
right.
Were you showing in the commercial gallery at that time?
I showed some at Butte, Ben DuBose.
Yep.
I showed there, and I guess that was the main thing. Maybe that had been a little earlier, somewhere in the right after I got out of Rice. I got married, just turned 20, got married, went to California. Wasn't too long till I came back and was unmarried. And then I did sort of this and that. Got back into art.
Mm-hmm.
Got to know a lot of the people. That was in the late 40s. Got to know a lot of the people that you talked to. Well, I had several shows at Catherine, two or three one-person
mm-hmm.
shows at Catherine
mm-hmm.
Swenson.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember my thrill when at one of them, Jim Sweeney showed up with Alexander Calder.
Oh, how fun.
An opening, and that was great fun. Anyway, yeah, well, when Catherine opened her gallery, that was good. And she had that connection with...
Andre Emmerich.
Emmerich. That's it.
Yeah.
And he would send her, as well as Joan Crystal, and paintings,
mm-hmm.
sort of mm-hmm. avant-garde paintings. New York artist,
mm-hmm.
and that really helped the gallery scene here. Again, it broadened things.
Well, it informed everyone,
and
stimulating.
Exactly.
It kept everybody's blood moving along.
Right.
Pretty well.
Right. So that was a good thing. And Jerry was encouraging of
all the local artists.
And she had such a good eye.
Could you remember, if you were to think about Houston, the art scene in Houston in the 50s, and then segueing into the 60s, Was it sort of just a real smooth, ongoing flow, or do you remember the 60s, late 60s, early 70s as being, kind of different than things have been in the 50s?
Well, to me, it was quite different, because in the mid-60s, I got on a school board, the Houston School Board,
mm-hmm.
and it was extremely political, extremely dramatic, or whatever you want to call it. It was quite an experience, but that was from 64, I ran, and then I didn't get off until 70.
Mm-hmm.
And so all that time, I thought for a while maybe I could do both, but I couldn't keep up with the art thing in any form, and certainly not even, just focus changed. And so I don't really know what was going on
then.
And
then the late 60s, yeah.
Yeah, till 70.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did other things, TV and whatnot.
What did you do on TV?
Well, I produced, Channel 2 kindly gave me a job doing community relations or something, because I was divorced by then. I had three little children, and so I had a job there, community relations. Then after a few months, they asked if I would, the FCC wanted them to do a non-commercial
mm-hmm.
children's program. Those were the days of Sesame Street mm-hmm. and the realization that, wow, you could do something worthwhile.
Sure.
And this was an NBC station here, KPRC. So it wasn't like Channel 8.
Right.
This was, but the FCC was breathing down the necks of commercial stations to do this. So they wanted me to work up. Since I'd been on the school board, they figured I would I'd have some feel for this thing about kids. So anyway, I did that for a few years, and they gave me total carte blanche.
What kind of show was it?
It was called Sundown's Treehouse, and it was participatory. It was kids coming in, about eight kids, and quite mixed. I mean, they were total diversity
mm-hmm.
of
mm-hmm.
ethnic diversity. I loved doing that program. The whole thing was. And that lasted a few years, and I could do anything, so I started bringing in handicapped children.
Mm-hmm.
And so the kids could see that kids can't see or can't hear, but they're kids. And whatever their problems, and they talk about them, and the kids on the program could ask them about them, what's it like, or this, or that, whatever they wanted to ask, whatever kids think of. So that kind of thing, it was really, I enjoyed this all thoroughly. So I got back into art, and Women's Caucus for Art then became important, because I've been so active politically that...
What year did that come up?
What, the Women's Caucus? The late 70s.
Yeah.
And that really, discrimination is everywhere. Just look at that. And this was certainly something that really needed to be worked on.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very active in that. Help get that going. Well, I was part of a whole group that worked on that and was active in that here and nationally for a few years, as well as doing my own work. And then at a certain point, you realize, okay, I've done that. I've got to get back to what's really me.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got to put all my energy and all my focus on that. So I did. And anyway, but it was, The gallery thing, I did show with Joan Crystal, and that was interesting, because she and Adrian did have this wonderful pre-Columbian thing. I still remember, where's his name? He was, for a while, the director of contemporary art, whether it was CAM by then or still CAAX. And he had a show that was Adler, I want to say, but I don't know if that was it.
That wasn't the Roaches show, was it?
No.
Or the one with the toast or bread?
That guy, that was different too, yeah. And it ended up with the food fight. Yeah, right. That was yeah, that was good. That was fun.
Yeah.
It was alive. It wasn't just this dreary dead.
Yeah.
I remember giving those funny little interviews that they ask you for those things when you're on a school board, and they said, what's the most important thing? What's the best thing about Houston? I said, the best thing about Houston is it's potential.
Mm-hmm. And
it's not there yet, but the idea that it can get there. Mm-hmm. It can be important. It can be really first class. It can be tremendous.
Well, and that it opens the door for you to actualize your potential.
Right.
That energy of go.
Mm-hmm.
Do it.
Mm-hmm.
Have fun.
Right, because it's not set in concrete.
It's not set in concrete.
That's it.
I think one of Houston's great gifts. Well, what do you have anything in particular that you would remember or just in the course of your art? Well, before we get into this question, how would you describe your artistic career and the art that you have made? You've dealt in all the media, right? Did you move from one to the other, or were you always doing multimedia?
Well, I started out two-dimensional things, and then I started, then when I was still pretty young, started sculpture
mm-hmm.
and ceramics mm-hmm. and all of those things. And then with Shori, did mm-hmm. a lot of work with Shori. And, I don't know, just happenstance and just by the way things were. I mean, I decided sculpture was it. I just wanted to see things that went around, that I could walk around, things
mm-hmm.
that cast a shadow.
Uh-huh.
I didn't want it to flat up on the wall. So, and I did work for several years, and well, I had that welding job half a week, and the rest of the week I could do my own work.
Well, what was your welding job?
Well, after I lost the job at Channel 2, I was like a media consultant for a while, whatever the hell that means. Stuff with TV, and this, you know, which was practically nothing. And then I've decided I was going more and more toward getting back into art. Art had always been there in my life since I was a kid, a little kid. So I sort of pulled back into that, and Catherine Swenson and I decided we were art consultants. So we, the two of us, set out on our career. And we made one grand splash, and these people wanted this, wanted that. Well, they took everything we had. Then they called her the next day and canceled the whole. So we did a little bit, but clearly this wasn't anything to pin your future on. And it wasn't, anyway. I realized that I had in the past done some big things, and they were very good. Back before I got married in the late 50s, I got a commission to do two very large outdoor things for the U.S. Green Stamp Building on Holcomb, out by Alameda. And there were two separate pieces of aluminum, but big, you know,
mm-hmm.
5-inch,
wow.
1-inch thick curl. Well, I couldn't make them, obviously. I had them fabricated, and so, okay, you have to have something fabricated if you work in metal and it's big. That, remember that. Then the other thing is in my working with multimedia, which was everything from paper to this to that, wood, sometimes metal would come into it. I didn't know what the hell to do with metal.
Mm-hmm.
I figured, well, I've got to learn to weld, so I have to get a chance to do something else large. I can do it. And idiots all over the world weld. I can do that. So I went to the community college and learned to weld. And I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got a job welding.
Welding what?
I welded the aluminum frames that plexiglass skylights went into.
Huh.
And it was, and the more you weld, the better you get.
Of course.
It's all just habit. I mean, practice. So I did this for, I worked half a week, and then the rest of the week I had
to do
my own work, and they gave me scrap plexiglass. So I did a lot of work with plexiglass. And
where was your studio at that time?
I guess,
was it in the house? Or?
By that time if I'd moved to this house. By the time I learned to weld, I think I had moved to this house when the garage was already a shop. People I bought it from in the mid-70s were old folks that were do-it-yourselfers. They added something on this house and did this and that. So it had everything.
Great.
Only thing I had to do was put in more electricity for a welding machine.
That was great.
Yeah, it was wonderful. Shelves and sink and a flat cement floor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not the biggest in the world, but it worked. It's worked for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I've done big things in there. Anyway, so there's this, forgotten what I was saying.
Well, you're talking about the welding and
oh, yeah.
And how much you loved it.
Oh, yeah. I really did. And so I had to do something after this job ended because the place folded up in the mid-80s. It shut down.
You mean the welding place?
The welding place.
Yeah.
Closed. And I'd been there 7.5 years.
Wow.
So I was really good. But it was a good life because I'd do that, make enough money that then the rest of the week I could do my art and I showed it all over.
Perfect.
Yeah, I remember I've had several times in my life I felt I really had to make a decision. Do I want to go into theater? Because I did a lot of theater too.
Mm-hmm.
Should I go into theater or should I go into art? And two or three times I've had to, you know, fork in the road. I had to sit down and figure, well, and finally I made the decision for once and for all that it was going to be art, because art you could pull more out of yourself for somehow. And it's more creative, obviously, than being an interpretive.
Right, vehicle.
Actor, a vehicle.
Right.
And the repetition, I loved rehearsals, but I get pretty, didn't so much love the night after night after night of
mm-hmm.
the performances.
Oh, where did you act?
I did some things at the Alley, and then I started that pretty young, too, when I was about 13. There was a remarkable woman who's sort of a quote-unquote icon of American theater since then, long since dead, Margot Jones.
Mm-hmm.
She was brought here by a terrific woman who was head of the Parks Department, Miss Fonday.
Christine.
Can't remember her first name. An older woman. Everybody was older then, you know.
Of course.
If you were 30, you were, oh, too bad, over the hill. Anyway, she knew about this young woman who was so brilliant. She graduated from UT at 18, Martha Jones, and she was out in California. She'd been up to Russia visiting to observe theater in Moscow, the Moscow Arts Theater. And then she somehow was in California, Pasadena Playhouse,
mm-hmm.
looking for something. I guess responded to an ad, and so she was brought here to have the community under the city, the community playhouse. My mother sees this in the paper, and I'm taking it down. And so I became part of that. And again, it was a thing of old adults and children and everybody mixed together. It
mm-hmm.
wasn't
one or the other.
It wasn't one or the other. It wasn't all super organized or structured, and it was down off of Houston Avenue, where the prison is now. The bayou was there. And, oh, well, it was just fabulous. And, you know, I grew up.
You were fortunate. So young to have all this coming. And then having the talent to be able to respond to all of that, too.
Yeah.
I mean, that, no wonder it was hard for you to figure out which path you wanted to take as time went by, because you were gifted, I can tell, listening to you. You were gifted enough to have those choices. And not everybody has those choices.
Yeah.
So the artistic seeds. Were your parents artistic?
My mother wanted to be a writer, but she didn't. But she hated being a housewife.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she was a real feminist, you know. She, all kinds of ways. She was, but she wouldn't join anything. But not that there was a group necessarily to join then. But she was pretty.
She recognized the arts.
The arts, that was it. That was the ultimate in life. That was the expression. And that's why she felt that the worst thing that could happen to a woman was get married, and the second worst thing that could happen to a woman was to have children, because they take away your opportunity, a woman's opportunity to develop her talents, her intelligence, and to grow as a person. So, I mean, I heard this stuff. Okay, well, I'm going to do it. I'll show you.
Anyway,
I had a husband that felt the same, that the last thing he wanted was a wife who would be a housewife, take care of the babies. I mean, Howard didn't want that. We agreed on that. early on.
Mm-hmm.
So we were on the same wavelength mm-hmm. there.